Good morning, everyone. Everyone can hear me okay? Great. Well, first and foremost, I want to thank you, Dr. Patterson, for such a warm welcome, a great introduction, and the hospitality here is amazing. And I'm so blessed to be here this morning. So I wanted to first apologize for a few things this morning. Number one, I'm wearing this beautiful suit here today, but I've got sneakers on and not shoes. So I had a little foot procedure last week, so getting my foot into a dress shoe is gonna be quite difficult this morning. Second, I am from New York, so I do root for the New York sports team, so don't hold that against me, okay? And third, when I was preparing to come up here and I was getting my itinerary from the staff here, and they had my timeline here, and I was gonna give a sermon this morning, and I said, wait, I'm not a pastor, I'm not a minister, but instead of a sermon, I will give you a little story of my life, so you get to know me a little bit of where I came from, my roots, a little timeline of how God has blessed me in so many ways, and how I got to this stage today, and getting the opportunity to spend some time with Dr. Patterson and being invited here, which I'm so grateful for. So I'm in my mid-40s. I grew up in New York, born and bred in New York to immigrant parents. My dad from Romania, my mother from Hungary, both immigrated here after the war. Both parents are Holocaust survivors, so I was born Jewish. My parents were both Jews, not practicing. Our practicing growing up was going to temple on Yom Kippur on the high holiday and having a Passover dinner. God wasn't a big part of our lives growing up. And I got bar mitzvahed at 13 years old. My parents get divorced shortly afterwards. My dad worked for the city of New York. So living in New York, on Long Island, on a city salary, we definitely weren't rich, that's for sure. And anything that we had to, anything we wanted of any sort of luxury that we'd call luxury, like the new Nike sneakers that may have came out, the running sneakers, I had to work for. And as was mentioned earlier, I started at a young age hustling, working as a kid, anything I could do to make money. And because of life and my parents kind of going their own way as a young teenager, so did I. And that's when I started going to the parties, doing crazy things as a young boy, and my parents couldn't handle me. And by the time of 16, 17, I left the house. I went to, of all places, Salt Lake City, Utah, where I spent about a year and a half. And I came back to New York at 18, and my sister got married. I missed being around family. She just had her second child. I moved in with my sister and brother-in-law, and he said to me, what are you gonna do for work? And one thing that God blessed me with was the ability to communicate and the ability to reach people. And so his friend was running a big investment bank in New York, and he said, maybe I can get you a job there. And if I take my sock off my foot and I put it on the table and you put a stock here, I didn't know the difference between a sock and a stock. And so I go into this place, and it's a football field of desks and wires and phones and people screaming, and I go see the big boss, and he looks at me and he's laughing because he's this little kid. And he goes, what am I going to do with you? And I made him laugh, whatever. I forgot what I said to him. And he looked at me, he goes, tell your brother-in-law to buy you 2 suits. You're going to start on Monday. And I worked in the back office, and I was watching these guys much older than me. Some of them couldn't even put a couple of sentences together and making so much money. And they let me get licensed a year later. My first month as a broker, I broke the firm's record opening accounts. And by 20 years old, I was the number one producer of over 1,000 brokers in this company. And I was a millionaire at 20 years old. Coming from nothing, knowing nothing. At this point, God is definitely not in my life. I've been to a church maybe twice in my life for, you know, a friend's, maybe a communion at some point or a death, but know nothing of the Lord, nothing of my own God. And so at the age of 21, by 21, I'm already training at this point all the new people that are coming into the company. I have every day 20, 30 people around my desk listening to me trade. And at 22, the chief compliance officer came to me and said, there's a few guys that are leaving to start our own company, and we want to make you a partner, and we want you to run the entire sales floor. So I left at 22, started my own company. We started maybe 14, 15 people. By 2 years later, by 1994, we were New York's fastest growing company. I had maybe 3,000 employees. I'm making millions of dollars a month personally, and I'm a kid. And living a crazy lifestyle. Crazy and unimaginable. But the one thing that I thought money had a parallel to being happy. And money had a parallel of just love. But at the end of the day, I was empty. I had the houses, the cars, the parties, meeting famous people all over the world, flying in private planes, doing things that, you know, if you were a young 20-year-old with unlimited means, and I thought that was, it was godlike. But at the end of the day, I was empty. And looking back today, when I look at my life, this was all God's plan for me. I never thought that, but understanding and praying, I understand this was my path. So a number of years later, God took it all away from me. I lived a crazy life, things that were destructive to me personally, from involved in drugs and alcohol and things that caused a crazy downturn in my life, that I lost everything. I mean, to zero, everything. And that's when God started working in my life and started to turn my life around. And it was a big wake-up call for me that this is not making me happy. So I started turning my life around and getting onto a different side of my life. And I started praying, but I didn't know what I was praying to. I had no guidance from people that had God in their heart at this point. So at this time I decide, you know what, I'm gonna try and do right. And one of my biggest attributes was the ability to attract people. And I'd have young men and women come in, and I'd attract them to my company. I'd train them. I'd make them amazing producers. So I said, you know what? I'm gonna do the same thing, but instead of having my own bank, I'm gonna start my own kind of training company, and I'm gonna place them at banks around the country. So I started writing my own material and developing my own training programs, and it was very expensive, and I thought, you know, placing people, I would make a lot of money, but you know what? Training people was really where the money was. And I met a gentleman in Boston that had this huge curriculum of content. And I put together a software company. And this is back in the late 90s, when the internet just started, where people were just, you know, you got an email address. It was just starting to develop. So I put together and started the first online training platform for financial services. So I went to all the states and I got approved in every state to provide continuing education training, anti-money laundering training, all the stuff that the banks are using. And I went to the first company I went to in Boston was John Hancock. And I went to the compliance officer. I said, how much are you charging for guys to train each year? He goes, well, it's costing us millions of dollars to fly people. I said, look, I'll build you the John Hancock Virtual University, and it's fully approved in every state in the country for all your life and health and all your securities training, and I'll do it for $250,000. And the guy goes, where do I sign? And from there, I landed almost every bank in the country, went around the country, and I sold the company, and I was still empty. And a childhood friend of mine that I grew up with fell on some hard times, and he was married to, he wasn't married at the time, it was his girlfriend, but the family, the dad was a deacon in the church, and she grew up in the church, and she was always taking my friend John to church. And finally, you know, he gave his heart to the Lord, and they were living such a beautiful life. And, you know, I remember the story he told me. I'll never forget this. When he was dating her, she was 8 months pregnant, and he goes to his now father-in-law, but back then he went to the dad and said, I can't even imagine someone saying that it was my daughter. John goes to the dad and says, and she's 8 months pregnant, I don't know what to do, but I can't stop cheating on your daughter. And he's crying, and this gentleman, instead of taking him out back, well, you'd probably shoot him as a hunter, but put his arms around him, and brought him to the Word, was crying with him. And from that point, you know, this is going back so many years, and today my friend has a beautiful family and lives such a beautiful life and is so involved in ministry. And so I call him up at this point, and I'm figuring out what I want to do, and he's running a real estate mortgage operation. And I call him up, hey John, how's it going? And he says, Stephen, you're not gonna believe it. Literally a minute ago, I'm with my partner and we're praying that somebody comes into our lives to help us build our business. I said, John, stop with this praying garbage. Stop, I don't wanna hear it. So I go visit with him, and I decide I'm gonna go a few days a week to work there, and we're working together, and I end up, you know, telling him I wanna become full-time in here, and this is where I got into the real estate business, because I understand finances and structuring on a financial aspect. Now, you know, real estate is really just one big financial instrument. So whether it's a stock or a building, it's all based on financial structure. So I started working with him, and I said, listen, John, you know, you guys are wasting your time. You know, the real way to make money in this business, you gotta be your own bank. And we gotta be lending and investing ourselves. So we put a fund together, and we raised a lot of money. And so we'd be, you know, I went to church with him a couple of times, and we'd be in the middle of some major deal, and there's money on the table, and we could lose a lot of money. And I'd walk into John's office, and I'm pulling my hair out of my head, and John would look at me, and he'd go, Steve, he goes, if it's gonna happen, it's God's will. You know, if God wants it to happen, it's gonna, if it doesn't, I'd look at him, I'd wanna throw him out the window. And I'd say to him, what are you talking about? But I'd go, every time I'd go back to my office, and I'd say to myself, I want that peace. I want that peace and that love that he has with his family and the friendships that he's developed with people in church and the community. And I was still empty. And I walked back into his, I'll never forget this. And I go, John, listen, you Christians have your own Bible. You have this whole New Testament thing. We have the Old Testament. You know, you guys are even praying from the wrong Bible. He looked at me like I had two heads on my shoulders. He goes, what are you talking about? He goes, all we read in the Old Testament, the whole New Testament is based on the Old Testament. He goes, look at my Bible. And I opened it, I go, wow. And I was blown away. And I started going to church with him every week. I started praying. And I felt a real change in my life and my heart. And just, it was the most incredible experience that I went through, that transformation. And now how my thought process started really changing, because not because of my own head, my own thoughts, it was what was in here. And, you know, having God inside of me, in my heart. And I gave my heart to the Lord, and from there my life changed drastically. And as was mentioned earlier, I'm very involved in the real estate business in New York. And now that I had the experience of all these years of structuring the financial aspect of it, we were helping developers and real estate owners put their projects together. I started learning and understanding how these projects work and understanding it from the real estate aspect of it. And that's the other thing God blessed me with, is kind of this vision. And I can see something, maybe a piece of dirt, and figure out what could be built there. And so I started getting involved in other projects in Manhattan and in Brooklyn. So one day, a number of years ago, I was working on a project in New York City with a very successful woman who was building, we have in New York today, there's a lot of successful, what you would call like food halls, different type of market. So she had the vision of building the largest Asian food hall in New York City. And so we were working on this project together, and she always talked about this church called the Brooklyn Tabernacle in Brooklyn. And she said, oh, I want to go to this church. And I had a friend of mine that grew up with Pastor Cimbala's family, and I asked him to send an email to Pastor Cimbala, can you get us? I don't know anything about this church. All I know is there's lines around the city block to get in, and they have this famous choir and all this stuff. And so he sends an email to Pastor Cimbala saying, my friend, give him my name, is a real estate financier and would like to come. And Pastor Cimbala was in Buenos Aires Airport at the time. And he got the email and called his assistant, said, and he was praying at the time that somebody to come into his life that could help him with this mounds of debt that he had on his all his properties, and he was dealing with all his financial struggle, even though it was this mega church, but they had their own struggles. And I said, well, not only do I want Stephen to come to the service, I want to meet him afterwards. So I go to this service. I don't know if anyone here has been there, but it's just magnificent. It was originally the oldest theater in North America. It was built in 1917. They spent, something like $60 million just to bring it back to its original form. It is gorgeous. It seats about 4,000 people. So I go, I see this beautiful choir, enjoy the service, and I go up to see Pastor Cymbal after. And just like this, he's got the microphone, and he's sitting across from me in his office. His wife comes to meet me, and we're talking, and he goes right into it. He starts talking about some of his problems. And I look at him, I go, after about 10 minutes, I said, Pastor, I don't mean to be rude. I don't mean to interrupt you. And by the way, guys, you'll know that about me. I say it the way it is, and just that's how I roll. I said, Pastor, I go, you are getting taken. And he looked at me like Brooklyn style. He goes, what do you mean I'm getting taken? I go, not only are you getting taken by all these developers, but you're even getting taken by your own bank. And, he looked at me and he reached out his hand and he said, you're no longer going to call me Pastor, you're going to call me Jim, and we're going to be friends. And from that point on, we developed an amazing friendship, and I helped him restructure all his debt and helped him finance all volunteer work to help Pastor Cymbal and help that church out. And from there, he's introduced me to so many other pastors and other faith-based organizations that I can, God put me in this place. And that's why I said earlier, God had this path for me. And now I'm able to use my experiences and use, what I've learned in life to help others and give to others. And it's been an amazing blessing. Guys like Pastor Cologne, who I met, who's a brother to Pastor Cymbal. He pastors a church in, gorgeous church in downtown Brooklyn near Barclay Center. And we work on projects together. So a few years ago, Pastor Cymbal calls me up on the phone. He said, hey, I need you to do me a favor. There's a pastor, he's had to come out of retirement out of Virginia. And he's got this place in Brooklyn, and they're financially having some real hard times. Can you do me a favor? Can you look into helping them out? So I said, sure. So I go meet this gentleman, and his name is Don Wilkerson. And he and his brother David Wilkerson started a faith-based organization called Teen Challenge back in the late 50s. And many of you may have read David's original book, The Cross and the Switchblade. So I meet Don and I fall in love with him immediately. And back in the 50s, heroin and the gangs were taking over New York and Brooklyn. And much like what's going on today, where heroin and opioids, it's like a big comeback from, 60 years ago. So they started their first teen challenge was in a place called Fort Greene, Brooklyn. At the time, was probably one of the, most gang-infested, most notorious for drugs and all sorts of stuff going on in the city. But today, if you roll the clock today, it's like the most shishy area in New York, which is being, all it's getting gentrified. So as costs go up and they're faith-based, they get, because they're faith-based, they get no government help, no government programming, and it's all through donation. So today they have locations in over 120 countries. They have 35,000 beds around the world, the largest drug rehabilitation program in the world. So I'm starting to work with Don, and I fall in love with what they're doing and the work that they do. And I said, you know what, Don, I'm gonna volunteer, and the real estate part of this is easy. We're gonna get you blessed. I know how to, I can do this like I'm looking at my hand. But I wanna figure out how can we help save people. So I'm about a year and a half ago, I was traveling all over the place. I was in South America, I was in Utah, I was doing some skiing, and I come back to New York, I was run down, I get really sick, I got bronchitis, pneumonia, and I end up getting x-rays at the NYU Langone Hospital on First Avenue and 34th Street, which, if you haven't been to New York, it's probably three city blocks, it's a huge place. And I'm walking through the lobby, and I see this glass booth. It's a radio station, and they're broadcasting live on Sirius Radio. It's the doctor's channel, sponsored by NYU Langone. And it hit me. I said, you know, there's nobody doing this for recovery. So I call up, I'm working with another church in the city, and one of the deacon's wives was the executive producer of CBS News, and I started talking to her about it, and she fell in love with the idea of creating this radio platform where we could deliver information and help people. And so she quit her job and came on full time, and we started this platform called The Recovery Network. So I started assembling a team of people, people that are in my path, some faith-based, some non-faith-based, business people, very creative people. And you know, one of the things that's going on today is and you're reading about it, you're hearing about it, and you're seeing it firsthand, the addiction and the drug addiction issue in this country is off the charts. And when I say off the charts, off the charts. Last year, more than 60,000 people died of overdose. Under the age of 50 in America, it's the leading cause of death in this country. Every 10 minutes, someone's dying of an overdose. It is crazy. And whether it's your neighbor, whether it's a friend, a coworker, or even a family member, it touches every one of us. And the biggest reason is these people are empty. They don't have like what we have, God in our heart and our life. They're empty. So we're building this radio platform, and the real group that we're going after are the family members. They're the ones on the front lines because they're hopeless. They don't know what to do, and they're hopeless. So we're putting all these teams together. Edwin's on our advisory board, so is Dr. Patterson, and we're trying to figure out how, Don Wilkerson said, this is great, we're gonna have this radio platform, but how do we actually help people? So we decided, after doing tons of focus groups, and I have my kind of software background, I said, you know, we came up with the idea of creating an app. And one of the things we've learned in life is really the way to help one another is through community. Like look at this campus. The reason this campus is so successful and so strong is we have there's a community here of people that are together helping one another. So we're creating this community, and we believe it's gonna be the largest community for family members, loved ones, friends, as well as addicts. They can come to our app to help one another. And I'll explain what we do. So the app is called, it's the recoverynetwork.org. And we're in the middle of developing this app right now. So there's three things when somebody comes and they pull up this app. One is they can locate. We've worked out a deal with the federal government, and we've got a link to every doctor, hospital, physician, counselor, or if they want to go to some sort of meeting, So they can click, if they're in Bismarck, North Dakota, they can click and see what help is in the area there. So they want to locate professional help. The other is that they want to learn. So they'll have live feeds from our radio platform, content, information. They can just learn. They don't want to talk to anybody. But the biggest thing that we did, which is incredible, is connect. So think of Uber and Facebook, okay? So let's say Bob Jones had three kids. He's living in Dallas, Texas, and 10 years ago, Bob lost his son, Johnny, to an overdose. And Bob wants to help other people. He wants to give back. So Bob would come to the Recovery Network and fill out a profile. Bob's a real estate agent in Dallas. Here's a little story about who he is. And then he's gonna give a story about his son, Johnny, and about his life and what he went through. He'll register with us. He'll get some initial training from us. And he'll become what's called a helper on our platform. Now there's Stephen in Fort Worth. He's got four kids, and his son Joey's been in two rehabs already. He's 16 years old, doesn't come home at night, and he's just lost, doesn't even know what to do. So he's gonna come to the Recovery Network, fill out his profile and a story about his child. So now it's Friday night, it's 11 at night, and Stephen's kid hasn't been home in 2 days, and he just doesn't know what to do anymore. So he's gonna go to the app, and he's gonna say, I need help now. And like Uber, it's gonna locate profiles that match Stephen's profile. And just like Uber, if you're an Uber driver, you can turn your Uber on or off when you wanna work. So if, let's say Bobby is driving from Dallas to San Antonio for a trip and he's got 3 hours to kill or 5 hours to kill, he's gonna turn his app, he's available now. So now Stephen can see all these profiles that are available for somebody to chat with now, talk with now, connect with now. And we are going to create the largest network of helpers and people that need help in the country. And we're so excited about what we're doing. And I just wanted to, you know, just to give an example, just in, I was doing some research. I mean, it's all over the place. Like here in, right in your backyard in Dallas, Jack and Hunt Freeman were Texas brothers with a lot going on for them. Hunt, 26, was a charismatic salesman at a Harley-Davidson shop. Jack, 29, worked as a golf assistant at an upscale country club. But the two also like to party with alcohol and recreational drugs. First using marijuana and cocaine in high school, later moving on to heroin. The brothers entered into rehab multiple times, but neither could stay clean for long. On Valentine's Day, Hunt fatally overdosed, sending Jack into a drug-fueled tailspin. 3 months later, he overdosed too. Okay. The mother says, I wouldn't want anyone to go through what we've been through before. And they're saying here, the vast majority of these deaths, approximately 80%, have taken place in white communities. And it's, you know, when people think that it's overdoses or drugs, they're thinking that you're in the hood in Harlem somewhere, but it's hitting all our communities. It's affecting all of us. And, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity to come here and talk about a little bit about what we're doing here and what we're building. If all of you can get the word out and, you know, register on where we're going to launch in about 6 to 9 months, but we're trying to register about 1 million people over the next 6 to 9 months. So getting the word out would be amazing, and that'd be a blessing for us. And if you can go to the recoverynetwork.org and register, it's called the recoverynetwork.org, register. If you can put on Facebook or send it out to people to register, that'd be incredible. So I wanted to give everyone a little bit of a history of who I am and where I came from and how God's worked in my life, and speaking to some of the students here as I've been around on campus and asking the young guys and girls, you know, what are you studying? What do you want to do? And the one thing, the one big advice that I can give, use your strengths. You know, God has a way of using us in so many different ways than we can even imagine. And whatever you're good at, if you're good with your hands, maybe it's doing something with your hands to bless others. Maybe you have a vision, maybe you have a great way of communicating. But whatever it is, use your talents. Use your talents to help bless others. And I want to thank you so much for letting me have the time up here today. And thank you everyone for your time today.